RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Tighe Stopford is an historian, political scientist, medical educator. In 2016, he founded the Hemp Foundation to improve things for people via education. In 2017, he wrote the first RNZCGP, that's the Royal New Zealand College of General Practitioners, approved course in New Zealand on hemp medicine / medical cannabis, and spent 4 years teaching healthcare providers. In 2020, he founded tigerdrops.co.nz. And we've invited Tighe on to talk about his complaint to the Director General of Health around hemp, and also, I guess, some history and why we are in the situation we're in, where it's pretty clear, and I have personal experience of this, the medicinal benefits of cannabis. Others might say the recreational benefits, whatever. But here we're in this sort of weird no man's land of something that has a known effect, positive effect for folk, especially in the medicinal space. And again, I have my own experience on that. And it's kind of not available like the pharmaceuticals out there, let's say. Tighe, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, Paul. Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I want to get on to your complaint and talk around conflicts of interest, a big pharma, all of that. But maybe it's an idea just to do a bit of a rewind on history here. So as I understand it, the use of cannabis medicinally, let's say, up till, 50, 60, 70 years ago, was kind of a given, was it?
So by way of example, in 1893, Great Britain imported 100 tons of hashish as medicine, and it was importing about 100 tons per year throughout the 1880s and 1890s. In Great Britain, cannabis sativa, sativa meaning cultivated, remained a prescription medicine until I think 1972.
What happened? What the hell happened?
Business, politics. Yeah, that's pretty much.
Right. So it was too conflicting with the new pharma business models coming online at the time, wasn't
yeah.
it?
I mean, it's a very porous, fungible product. It's a plant, right? I mean, most people, you know, plenty of people grow Papaver somniferum, opium poppies for their beautiful ornamental nature, and that's legal. It's not legal for them to make poppy tea or anything else, morphine, heroin, or to consume the opium from them, but they can legally grow that plant. Cannabis is a much more useful plant, and
right.
basically capitalism is built on scarcity. You know, the control of markets. So if something's incredibly useful, then you need to either prohibit it or privatize it to extract the most profit from it, if that is your goal.
Well, that's interesting, because something that clearly works, and like I just said before, I had a bout of cancer 10 years ago and I used it for pain relief and it worked incredibly well compared to everything else. In fact, it was the biggest relief you could ever want. So I won't hear anyone, you know, saying or talking against my personal experience, and there are plenty of other people in the same boat. But the curious thing here is, a product that is scarce, you know, the way markets work. But if it's so beneficial to humanity and really impacts on suffering, you'd think you clear a space for that, right? You clear some sort of space for that.
It's hard politics, isn't it? It's very hard politics. But the potential joy in the situation is, you know, technically we live within a democracy. So the challenge is simply up to people like you and I and Aaron Hudson and all the good people listening to inform each other, so that wrong things can no longer be imposed upon our ignorance. Knowledge is power, but we do not understand. For 100 years, we have been disconnected from this product. For 100 years, learning has not only stopped, it's been pushed down the memory hole. I have a fascinating letter paper in The Lancet from, I think, 1890 by Queen Victoria's doctor, who had prescribed cannabis for over 30 years. And in that letter, and it's more of an article than a letter, it's, you know, it's an actual article. And in that article in the letter, he displays a far more profound understanding of the benefits and uses of cannabis than the College of GPs in New Zealand or Australia. And yet, since he wrote that article, there's been over 33,000 peer-reviewed papers published on the subject of cannabis and its therapeutic effects.
I can imagine the industrial medical complex pushing it out, keeping it out. But all the rest is what? Some kind of groupthink.
Well, let me try and explain. So medicine originally came from plants and plants and foods. As Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, because the physician tends, but nature mends. But then as we got to the 1920s, you get kind of a conflux. The pharmaceutical industry not only becomes a global cartel that divides up the world and is also so rich and powerful as to influence democracies, which are basically run by special interest groups. Yep. Citizens have to compete against special interest groups, but most of us are basics and lifestyle, right? So the field is pretty free for organized special interest groups. Then you have the whole medical education system, which seems conflicted. And if I can give you an example, over 40% of all pharmaceuticals target your cannabinoid system.
Got
That's
it.
$500 billion minimum. Over 40% of all medicines target G protein coupled receptors. That's a scientific name for your cannabinoid receptors.
Right.
And yet doctors not only don't learn about the cannabinoid system, they don't learn about G protein coupled receptors. They also don't learn that the signals of the system are called cannabinoids.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't learn that these signals themselves are made from food, essential fatty acids, which we are not allowed to make claims for. In this country, we are not allowed to make claims for food. And the higher purpose of the little cannabis joke there, the higher purpose of the Hemp Foundation is to actually change our policy from the purely pharmaceutical. So what the Japanese did wisely in the 80s, they recognized that they were going off a cliff demographically, and that was going to result in huge human harms and huge pharmaceutical costs, you know, harms being related to the pharmaceuticals. And so what they did was they created an entirely new category: foods with special health characteristics, which meant that consumers, you know, we've been told for 40 years we've got all this consumer power, right? But you've got no power if you know nothing, yeah? And you've got no, yeah. So they created this category for which citizens could make informed choices about foods for health. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect, but I am saying it's a huge step in the right direction.
Well, hang on, because I hear plenty of foods recommended for health mentioned all the time.
Such as?
Well, I mean, there's great information out there now on keto diets, on limiting carbohydrates and dodging the problem of insulin resistance, pre-insulin, and then type 2 diabetes. It all comes through from food.
Yeah, but when you go to the shops, you know, you don't see black currants may aid eye health. It's quite specialized. Generally speaking, there's a bit of a disconnect, I think.
I guess the point I'm making is that it kind of doesn't add up when everyone knows that eating healthy food is actually has a medical application, if you want to think of it that way.
Well, exactly. But then, you know, look at why.
Yeah. No,
you know, it's about markets.
The other interesting thing too is, and I know because a while back on another radio station, I interviewed someone who knew a lot about the history of smoking. We were talking about that and cannabis came up. It was interesting to hear how cannabis was actually demonized here and in other places. And it was on a racial argument. It was a racial scare. That card was played, which is, think about that.
Well, they'll play any card. I mean, you know, without wishing to be terribly distracted, you know, we get Russia and China demonized for being authoritarian, you know. Okay. Is there anything else going on there? Is there anything to do with new energy technologies or the control of oil and trade routes? You know, no, they're authoritarian.
Want to read out this quote from Dr. Stuart Jessamyn, GM of MedSafe. He said to the Health Select Committee 2017, when asked about the dangers of legalizing cannabis, the danger is that it could be used to treat conditions for which there are already products on the market. Kind of the quiet part out loud there.
Yes. Sue Scott, one of the high ups in medicines control, keywords there, promptly shouted, driving, driving, driving. And then they went down the whole psychiatric red herring route as well. You know,
sorry to jump in, but I mean, we've all consumed cannabis. I would have to say, I'm not a great experienced drug taker, but cannabis is far safer in every way than even alcohol. A lived experience can tell you that, and you talk to anyone about it. Where are these people living?
In 1988, the Drug Enforcement Agency, under the aegis of Judge Francis L. Young, administrative judge, ruled that cannabis sativa was safer than most foods consumed on a daily basis. Ruled. And that it should be immediately be descheduled. The Bush senior White House threw that in the bin.
Right.
Senior also got tax breaks for Big Pharma.
Okay. So it all comes back to the same place.
Ultimately. Money and markets. Money right. And markets. Yeah. And it is what it is. You know, people have no idea how legit cannabis is. You can see here, hopefully.
Yeah, you're holding that up to a screen. Listeners, it says medical-grade cannabis, clinical guide. Yep.
That's the Israeli clinical guide.
Okay.
They're the world leaders. And just on the side of it, I've stuck a picture from a 1,000-year-old Catholic cathedral, and that's Jesus healing the blind under the cannabis tree in gold-leaf glass mosaic.
Yes.
So that cathedral, which is one of the most important cathedrals in the Catholic Church, is actually a cathedral of cannabis, and it tells the story of the tree of life, food, fiber, medicine, pleasure, a strategic resource. And the recipe for the holy oil of the Jews, given to Moses when he walked up to the top of the mountain and spoke to God in the burning bush, the recipe for that oil is only to be found in the Hebrew because of a mistranslation into the Greek and from there King James and every other Bible. And the original recipe is myrrh, cinnamon, cassia fistula, and cannabis, fragrant cane. And it's because the Jews know their Hebrew that Israel is the world's leader in medical cannabis. And
is that the connection? Okay, that's fascinating. All right, why do you think there's such an obsession with trying to separate out any of the psycho effects of cannabis and any sort of medical benefit? Because I think the two are linked, actually, in my experience anyway. But there seems to be this obsession with no one could ever get high under any circumstances.
And yet the Lord is most high. And, you know, it's a red herring, like authoritarian governments and communism.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a boogeyman.
What do we say about the current Fasans regime on cannabis? Because you can go to your doctor now and it can be prescribed. So I guess that is It's something. Oh,
we have made there. I'm not denying that there's huge progress in going from absolute prohibition to a regime where any doctor can prescribe any patient any cannabis product for any condition. That is a huge step forward. Yeah. But the simple fact is 49% of the population wanted a legal THC market. So there's clearly no social license for prohibition. The key thing for me is let's leave all of that behind and just simply take a science and health based approach. What is the best way to improve people's health? We put folate in bread to stop 16 babies a year being born with spina bifida.
Yeah.
Now, the Ministry of Health is desperate to keep cannabinoids out of food, and yet cannabinoids regulate normal function broadly, from mental health to physical health to emotional health, in almost every facet. So if we were to take the folate approach to hemp cannabinoids, then we would be taking meaningful steps to reduce our chronic disease burden of dementia, osteoporosis, cancer. One in two of us will get it. One in three of us will die of it. But unfortunately, cancer is a key driver of pharmaceutical revenues and customers or cures.
Yeah, well, during my treatment, I found out that the bag of chemo that they were administering to me on one morning was worth $5,000.
Yes. I have a British Medical Journal case study of an 83-year-old female who was diagnosed with lung cancer. And she said no thank you to chemo because her husband had been through it. And she kept smoking a pack a week of cigarettes. And 18 months later, the doctors call her in and say, we don't know what's going on, but your lung tumor has gone from 43 millimeters to 8.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe it's the cannabis oil I've been using, she said.
Yeah, which is easy to single out if you're on a particular regimen. You can see
which
that.
She was, which she was. Yeah. She was on a gram a day. A gram a day. So you were using cannabis for symptomatic relief to actually attack the cancer selectively, not like chemo, which is unselective, non-selective. Chemo poisons everything. But cannabinoids as signals can enable your body to selectively suicide those cells as they are supposed to. Normal circumstances.
Here's an interesting thing. Don't want to make it about me, but I got a real world experience. So yeah. I think it's fair enough that I talk about it. Is that I used it for pain relief, sleep deprivation, because morphine and tramadol were just blowing every pattern of my life and thinking away. I could just feel it going on. And you need them more and more to maintain any sleep or any distraction from your suffering, I guess. But that comes at a cost. I noticed with using cannabis medicinally, all that went away. I could sleep again. I got energy back. The other thing was, and I was surprised to hear it, I was told that I was one of the fastest recovering patients from stage 4 throat cancer, remember that, that they had ever seen. And I wondered, I was thinking at the time, why would that be? Just say.
Yeah, I have a significant database of papers on cannabinoids and cancer, a significant database. And here's the thing, so cannabis has been used to treat cancer and tumors for thousands of years, right? Thousands of years. The first one I've found in Western medicine is the anti-neoplastic activity of cannabinoids by Munson et al. In the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, 1975. And in it, lung cancer and leukemia were found to be animals treated for 10 consecutive days with THC demonstrated a dose-dependent action of retarded tumor growth. The more THC, the less cancer.
Boy,
Yeah. No further research was published until 2006.
Right.
And yet
that's
it was
a, that's
published.
That's a big gap between drinks.
Especially when, you know, the drinks are being had at the National Cancer Institute. Like, you'd expect the ears to go up, wouldn't you? You'd expect some interest. But this is the thing. If you could get a proper cancer protocol of cannabinoids through the ministry, through the New Zealand prescriptions, you know, right now, it would cost you $250,000 up, right? To grow the cannabis for that regime would cost you $100.
Yeah. So huge.
If huge
on that level too, yeah.
Huge on that level. And so I really think the opportunity is for us to have an honest conversation. You know, for me, cannabis actually really is a constitutional issue. It strikes to the heart of the question, who are we? What rights do we have as citizens? What responsibilities do we have to each other as citizens and a nation? And how best can we advance our well-being in all ways?
I'm looking at the misclassification leading to restrictions on CBD in foods, and I think you touched on that just before. But I note the limit here, 75 milligrams per kilo, when the known safety profile could allow for as much as 1,000 milligrams plus, which means, surely, if that's correct, there's such a limiting factor being placed on the advantage that could be got from this. It's almost like it's being done on purpose, you know.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, so it's denial of benefit. It is denial of benefit. And if you let's talk about the fraud thing. In 2016, Helen Kelly, who had lung cancer, inspired me to set out to educate medical professionals on cannabis and the untaught physiological system.
Did she use it? I didn't know Helen Kelly, but I knew of her situation. Yeah.
She was straight edge, you know, but she was also, you know, quite non-functional with pain and cancer. And people started giving her products and she tried them. It's like, oh my goodness, I can function.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's incredible, actually, to find that you can do that in a pretty depressing situation.
Yes. And unlike Paul Holmes, Martin Crowe, and other prominent New Zealanders who had used, you know, cannabis in extremis, she actually said, I should really stand up and use my profile to advocate for this because this is making a huge difference to my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, in her bravery, she inspired me to set up, you know, do the education thing. And along the way, I met some really great people. Chris Woodney, who made New Zealand's first trademarked CBD product, No Promises, which got him immediately raided and shut down, even though it was legal, right? Because this is the thing. In New Zealand, we had world-leading legislation from 2006 until 2018. World-leading legislation. And that meant that legally licensed hemp farmers could make any product of hemp, which would include hemp oils. Yeah.
Right.
But the ministry then threatened hemp farmers with six-figure fines if they made hemp oils. Yeah. And the loss of their license because it's medicines control. Literally, that's the name of the department. It's about control of benefit, monetizing of access, and never mind the human consequences.
Except if it's them.
Well,
I'm telling you, if they were in my situation, they would have been on their knees. Thank you. Thank you for this.
What do you mean exactly?
If they found the relief that is available through that, if they were struggling themselves, they wouldn't deny it to themselves. They'd be on their knees thanking, whoever.
So. Well, here's a little segue. I want to try and make sure I get back on track, but Associate Professor John Ashcroft, John Ashton of Otago University, who is one of New Zealand's leading cannabinoid scientists, who, you know, is often, you know, quoted as being sort of, you know, contrary on medical cannabis and saying there's no evidence, despite having published comprehensively on the benefits and promise of cannabis and cannabinoids. When he first saw me at medical conferences with my stuff, he was genuinely angry to see me there bringing world-class, state-of-the-art, cutting-edge research to the medical profession, which I thought was fascinating. He looked like Beaker from The Muppets. His upper lip was right up by his nose. Yeah. Hey, he was not a happy camper.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he also got cancer. But luckily enough for him, Big Pharma donated $860,000 worth of novel drugs for him. You know, Not everyone gets that. Now, where was I going before? Oh, the fraud. So world-leading legislation, legal for products to make, but medicines control is stopping farmers from bringing products to market unless they're real, real brave people like Chris or who were they called? Larry's Gold, nice farmer couple in Reefton.
Reefton.
Yeah, I know. But in 2016, FSANS, the food regulator, was assessing low THC hemp foods. Now, hemp is cannabis. Mm. Hemp is cannabis. And cannabis is a polypharmaceutical. All cannabis, pretty much, contains over 500 active ingredients, right? So hemp is cannabis, but not all cannabis is hemp.
Okay, yeah? Gotcha. Yep.
So FSANS was assessing hemp foods, and FSANS noted at the start of this proposal that the ministers of health, the ministers of health of Australia and New Zealand had requested it set a limit on CBD in food, quote, to distinguish between a food and a therapeutic.
Okay, yep.
Quote, yep. To avoid blurring the line between food and therapeutic.
And that really means that's code for blurring the line between food market and pharmacy market.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Can't have the one interfering with the other, and it's only a one-way street on that, I would imagine.
Well, yes. And it's sinister. And yeah. As someone who comes from a patient background in terms of medical misadventure, unnecessary death, you know, a friend of mine died of leukemia when he was six. You know, it's just like it's disagreeable, I think, this kind of control. It's at odds with our self-image.
It always seems the politicians always agree with their establishment layer, right? Yeah. They never step outside. No one ever comes and asks me, you know, hey, Paul, tell me about that. And I tell them.
As George Carlin, the comedian, said, it's a big club and we ain't in it.
Yeah. Tell me about your complaint to the Director General of Health, Safati, right?
Yes, Diana Safati.
Around hemp. Tell us about it.
Certainly. So, yeah, it took me 6 years to figure out the fraud. I believe it's a fraud. I call it a fraud. It's a little bit complicated, so hang in, listeners. So CBD oils were legal under the hemp regulations. Then FSANS is assessing low THC hemp foods, but it's been asked to set a limit on CBD in food. But it says it's not within our power to deny the public safe, beneficial compounds. And if we do deny the public safe, beneficial compounds, and someone challenges us in court, it'll probably fall over. And that's when MedSafe, knowing it was a lie, because I have the OIAs of their internal advice, said CBD is a controlled drug. And if something is a controlled drug, it cannot be in food, it cannot be a dietary supplement, and it cannot be a herbal remedy, right? Fortunately, ESR our nation's forensic chemistry laboratory, the police forensic chemistry laboratory, had come to the same conclusions as MedSafe's own internal advice, that CBD was not, in fact, a controlled drug. And they vigorously contested MedSafe's position. They said, no way, CBD is not a controlled drug. In fact, the general manager of MedSafe even made a statement to the High Court to this effect. Now, this is the kicker. MedSafe couldn't actually object, couldn't actually overrule ESR on science and law, because not only is it forensic laboratory, it's also the police. So what they did was they appear to have conjured a legal fiction, which they've then hidden under the cloak of legal privilege that no one can see whether it's fact or fiction. And then to all subsequent requests, they've said, no, we're not releasing the legal opinion that we've used to say that CBD is a controlled drug. Because what they said to the food regulator is, we have a legal opinion that says CBD is a controlled drug. And they never showed it to FSANS.
Well, anyone could say anything that they wanted if you can't produce it or won't show it. I mean, do we believe it?
Well, good question. So after 3 years of asking nicely, the ombudsman is finally now looking for that legal opinion. Well, within the next 7 days, they should submit the request for the legal opinion. Now, after many, many, many requests for the legal opinion, we finally got a description of the grounds used to assert CBD was a controlled drug. And there's about 20 of them. And all of them are nonsense. But one of them stands out, you know, like dog's balls.
Yeah, which and, one?
That's the one where they say that the Global Apex Treaty, the United Nations Single Convention on Narcotics, yeah? Right. Where they say that UNSCN is explicitly prohibitionist and that there's nothing in it that lends itself to a more lenient interpretation. Now, having read the treaty, I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's the opposite of true. That's the opposite of true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're kind of casting around desperately, let me
for excuses.
Yeah.
For excuses. We are talking about a plant that produces in abundance the molecules our body naturally makes to regulate everything and maintain what technically is called homeostasis or equilibrium, or what you and I would simply call normal health.
Right.
Yeah. And cannabis makes three times the amount of those compounds that we do. It makes more than 200. So we make more than 60. It makes more than 200 of the 500 active compounds it makes. And, you know, look, here's a book called Nutritional Oncology.
Yep.
Food for Cancer.
Yep.
Right? It's a $200 book. It's an academic press, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ethnobotany, Ethnopharmacology, another $200 book. You know, food is medicine.
Yeah.
But the problem we face is we live in a society that's based around markets rather than public service.
Boy, we need to wake up to that, don't we?
Actually,
let's grow up, put the big boys and girls trousers on and
yeah. Well, if you're into your politics and your economics, you've probably heard of a guy called Schumpeter who talks about the creative destruction of capitalism. You know, so the whole point being, as you progress, markets are destroyed and markets are created.
Yeah.
You know?
And the reason. Yeah. Hmm? It evolves.
Yeah, exactly. 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 But for that to occur, you usually have to struggle against monopolistic forces.
Yeah.
Cartel. As Adam Smith said, let four men get together in a room and the talk inevitably turns to cartel, right? It's just business, right? That's why knowledge is power. You know, on this subject, by the way, if I could make a mad leap into space, the issue you know, money is a public monopoly, but we give the public monopoly to private commercial Australian banks. You know, it's a bit like cannabis. It's a bit like Big Pharma. You know, where's the benefit actually going? You know, because public infrastructure, like public health, is a fourth factor of production. You know, if we actually have public infrastructure like public transport, roads, housing, health, education, energy, water, that reduces the costs of living, it reduces the costs of business, and it allows society and our economy to flourish. The basic problem we have in late stage capitalism is that everything is cartel, everything is increasingly privatized, and that increasingly sucks the money and power out of our local economies and away from us as individuals and citizens.
And when it comes to banks, it's good to realize that your deposit is actually an unsecured loan to them.
100%.
It's not your money once you've given it to them.
Yeah.
Speaking of follow the money, I'm curious, what does MedSafe get out of what it approves money-wise? Do we know?
Well, it's not as simple as that, but my understanding is that 90% of the revenues, it's basically it's kind of user pays. You know, my understanding is that 90% of the budget of MedSafe comes from what could be considered clipping the ticket. There are levies on the services they provide. And it seems to me that is a perverse incentive for the regulator, especially given that the regulator doesn't have any KPIs for public health. So there's no actual metrics within the Ministry of Health for improving public health.
Oh, so they don't actually have to deliver success.
It doesn't seem so. Mm. So safety is their metric, and yet we can see in examples like, what was it called? The surgical mesh that's been cutting women's wombs in half. Also, obviously, the vaccine, where in fairness, MedSafe did object to the vaccine, saying there wasn't enough safety data, but then they got overruled. So,
But they didn't come out publicly and declare anything, did they?
No, but it's politics, right?
Yeah, but that would have been helpful to some people who might now still be alive.
It would have been. I mean, I'm just impressed they said no in the first place.
No, I get that. I get it. Yeah.
I don't want to hate on people or hate on institutions. I think that we just need to follow everything up to the headwaters and see what the policy DNA is and what the outcomes are. And if we do that in this instance, then what we see is that because MedSafe and the Ministry of Health don't think foods should have health benefits, they can't actually really, and because they're locked into a medical pharmaceutical model, and because they have this potential conflict of interest on revenues, and because cannabis can potentially undermine products already in the market, that the system is problematic.
Yeah. The other thing problematic. Yeah. When it comes to, not having KPIs in that specific area, I'm surprised at that, because that's the actual fundamental mission. There's the other thing too, as we understand it from people we've interviewed here, that pharmaceutical drugs, they are the third biggest killer of people.
I think technically it's medical misadventure.
Okay, but a lot of that is pharmaceutical.
Right? Yes, related. Yes.
But that doesn't seem to ring too many alarm bells.
Well, it's just the market, right?
Collateral damage. Oh, well, never mind.
Well, friendly fire.
Yeah, friendly fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had a reply from the Director General saying, thank you, Tig, for your letter, and we're...
Oh, yeah, so yeah, like I did that. I did send, thank you for that, I did send a 5-page letter with sources to the Director General making a formal complaint about the misclassification of CBD.
Yeah.
And after 4 months, I received a reply, and the reply said, the classification of CBD is the classification of CBD. Which did not address...
Well, it took 4 months to get to that?
Yes. And, you know, as we both know, that didn't address my complaint.
No.
It didn't address the evidence. But, you know, Chris James, the manager of MedSafe, did wish me well. And I can only hope it was meant genuinely. And I can only hope that he would like to see a more holistic health system. And I can only continue to press on with the ombudsman to get the legal opinion and from there to judicial review, which, yep, like the ombudsman, lacks any teeth. But if I get, you know, so the ombudsman has made it clear to me that legal privilege is grounds, is legal privilege is legal grounds for the ministry to hold it and to deny it to the public. And I have gone to great lengths to make clear to the investigator that legal privilege should not be used to hide deception, and that this is a matter of intense public interest and, even more importantly, of constitutional importance from a public service perspective, that it has significant implications. Having said that, as there is no judicial enforcement accountability for this. All I can do is go forwards, gather the evidence, and seek to educate, inform, and activate the public. Because if I'm correct, which I'm 99% sure I am, then they have no excuse.
Yeah. Any politicians listening right now, Ty? Do you think there is any political downside, because that's their equation, to, what's the word, support medicinal cannabis, one thing, I suppose, but the use...
Well, you should ask Simon O'Connor that, because I met Simon at 2017.
Okay, well, I will.
I met him in 2017 before the election, and I delivered him by hand a half dozen scientific papers, which were annotated and highlighted. And I gave him the full story and about basically cannabis being a food and a nutraceutical, and us needing food grade hemp cannabinoids rather than pharmaceutical grade. And he then went on and specifically stated in the House, recorded in Hansard, that there was nothing special about cannabis.
Okay, well, I will ask him about that, because it's not difficult for me to get that opportunity. So
Yeah. But it's like Chloe...
Might be a bit of a curly one.
Yeah, Chloe's not interested. No politician has been interested, and the only politician who got it, you know, who got the connection between food and health and cannabis and cannabinoids and health straight off the bat. And actually, he immediately actually made the connection to Japan, nutrition, blue zones, all that stuff. And that was Winston Peters.
How did I know you're going to say Winston? I mean, not that I was hoping it would be him, but I just thought if there's anyone, as you're talking there, isn't that interesting?
Fascinating.
Maybe they can have some influence, you know, greater influence.
Most other politicians don't want to know.
I think I know the answer to that, Tiger, and that is because there has been an exercise, I call it brainwashing, in the fear porn of it all, of it being a gateway drug. And as soon as you even look at it, you could be waking up next morning, you know, injecting heroin or something into your system.
Sugar is my daughter's gateway drug.
Yeah. Well, we know the problems that causes.
But you see behind me here, Paul? So this is a quote from a report given to the National Drug Policy Unit.
Right.
Cannabis is potentially a panacea, which is a universal cure, right?
Yep.
For overall health maintenance and protection, much like aspirin is used to prevent stroke and heart disease in healthy individuals, because the endocannabinoid system, which isn't taught in medical school, is critical for the body's overall homeostasis, normal function, equilibrium, and influences all of our main organ and tissue systems.
Well, there goes your business model right there.
Yeah. A National Drug Policy Unit, 2008. They kept it for internal reference, and the National Drug Policy Unit was then disbanded. I have for years, I believe it's years, I think it's like 2.5 years, been trying to get the health reports from the Ministry of Health on cannabis. I've got them up to 2008. I haven't got them from 2008. And then the ombudsman finally got an assurance that they would be provided and the investigation was closed. And then I think it was 4 or 6 months later, I realized they still hadn't been provided. So I was like, can I please?
Yeah. Oh, it's him again. Yeah.
back on the hamster wheel.
Do you think they've realized, we're going to wind up in a moment because we're up against time. Do you think they've realized that the medical establishment here, let's say here in our country, that what happened in the last 3 years has so destroyed trust in any of them? Now, there might still be pockets of trusting, follow the science people around, but virtually everyone I talk to has a trust issue now with the medical system, to the point where they were actually reluctant to go to the doctor ever again. I'm not trying to blow this up, but that's what has happened. I don't know if they realize that or not, but here's the thing. Once people work out that there are the podium of truth is not so truthful, let's say, they're not going to care about their stupid rules. Don't give a damn about it. They've lost the fight, I guess is what I'm saying, even if they don't realize it.
Oh, really? I'm going to have to disagree with you here. Yeah, because while I completely agree with loss of trust, at the end of the day, there's a certain momentum to a nation, and there is a cloak of privilege in the power, in the technocratic, powerful political bureaucratic castes. And, you know, market conditions can always tighten, you know, in terms of, you know, state apparatus of various sorts.
You mean harsher policing and things like that? Is that what you're talking about?
The solution is always what it's always been, an informed and active citizenry, because we get the democracy that we permit, because they govern with our consent. And most of the time, we're asleep. And meanwhile, the Orwellian language that is employed, I mean, the right these days, for 40 years, we have been told that employing free market principles would improve our economy, right? And yet, when they say free market principles, they're saying the opposite.
They're talking cartels.
Yeah, they're talking monopolies. They're talking private monopolies.
Yeah.
Instead of public monopolies that reduce the cost of living and business. Their free market is the market to fill their boots. Whereas the actual free market is a market where we are free to compete and where the state actually ensures that the infrastructure for an economy exists.
Yeah, well put. That's a great line to end on, Tig, I think.
All right. Been a pleasure speaking with you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Been really interesting chatting with you. And we'll stay across this and hopefully maybe come back on another occasion to get an update or talk more about it.
Yeah. If and when I get this legal opinion, I'll be in touch.
That'll be great. Tig Stopford, thanks for coming on RCR. Really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Paul. All the best.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.